these games only require a few pieces of paper, a couple of dice, and sometimes a table.
Board games give people the opportunity to sit around a table, look at each other face to face, and actually enjoy each other.
In many cafes around the world, people of different ages gather together to play a board game. These board games may not be worthy in case of people's understanding of life, unlike physical games, but they can reveal some secrets of life to us.
I played games with my family growing up. We didn't have a TV, which I know is a shock and horror to the world, but it made us play more, do more things together.
Since then, Walt Disney has become the largest animation producer in the world. And this film company has made a huge profit by making dozens of memorable cartoons. This process continued after Disney's death in 1966, but an important event took place in 1995. While nearly 70 years have passed since the production of Disney's traditional 2D animations, and a year before the animation of The Lion King was able to sell more than $430 million at the box office and receive an Oscar award, a 3D animation challenged Walt Disney's dreams. Toy Story was produced by Pixar and under Steve Jobs' supervision. This animation attracted all the viewers. It must be mentioned that Pixar wasn't a very famous company at that time, so Pixar became a serious competitor for Walt Disney. However, Walt Disney executives decided to be in charge of the release of Toy Story in cinemas exclusively. Walt Disney's partnership with Pixar continued until 2006. The more important thing is that there are no more competitors. Just like Monopoly board game, Walt Disney rolls the dice like a winner in this game. The rest of the players have to continue playing and pay their rent.
Today, the Justice Department's Antitrust Division approved a huge purchase. Disney is buying up most of 21st Century Fox's assets. This is a $71 billion deal. The decision comes after Disney upped its offer this morning for Fox's movie studio, sports networks, and cable channels.
In Monopoly board game, one player precedes the others and starts to purchase houses and hotels. This process reaches a point that this player's properties become so big. From then on, whenever he rolls the dice, one of the players goes bankrupt. Finally, after a few rounds of the game, everyone is forced to sell his property to the monopolist and say goodbye to the competition. No one has committed a crime, and apparently everything is legal. Throughout the game, everyone competes fairly. The result of the game is the formation of a monopoly. During the Cold War and even after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was a difference of opinion between the supporters of the socialist and capitalist economy. And they had to deal with this question: which system is better for people? In socialist system, there is no competition between factories, and there is not supposed to be any better one. In this situation, the consumer is always harmed by the low quality of the products. In the capitalist system, competition is the main issue. In this situation, everyone should try hard to produce a better product at a lower price and take over the market. It seems that consumers always win in this market, although this is only the appearance of this economy. But behind the scenes of the capitalist economy, they are the owners of the companies who get the main profit. In capitalism, not everyone is supposed to be the boss, and there are only a few big bosses and everyone else works for them. When we talk about Japan, We think about technology, audio, and video equipment. We also think about streets with large screens and high-speed internet, and also people who are always busy with their cell phones. But in Japan, apart from IT and high-tech products, other things are also made, which have a history richer than such products. YKK has been producing zippers since 1934. This Japanese company produces more than 7 billion zippers in different types every year and owns almost half of the world market. Zippers may be considered an unimportant commodity for many of us, and it is better to mention another example to understand monopoly better. This example takes us to Milan in Italy. This city is famous for fashion and expensive clothes. Milan reminds us of its two football clubs and the San Siro Stadium. However, Milan is the monopolistic center of sunglasses in the world. Luxottica designs and then retails more than 80% of all sunglasses brands in the world. Luxottica designs all kinds of brands such as Ray-Ban, Oakley, Prada, and Versace. Of course, people around the world do not know the reality and think that each pair of these glasses are made in different countries. However, it may not matter much to the people of the world who makes zippers and sunglasses. But it is definitely important who provides the food we need. Tyson is one of these companies that focuses on the supply and distribution of meat in the United States of America. Approximately 25% of the white and red meat of the United States is sold by this company. Tyson is so big that accusations against it have never reached any results. In 2017, it became known that this company uses a kind of antibiotic in the diet of chickens. In the beginning, this story went viral in social media and news agencies. But after only a few weeks, everything returned to normal and nobody followed the issue anymore. It is not in anyone's interest to fall out with Tyson. In fact, in today's world, apart from well-known tech giants such as Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and Amazon, whose monopolies have been in the headlines for a long time, simpler products such as zippers, glasses, meat, and many other ones are only made by one or more large companies. This is why no one can fall out with them. But monopoly is not seen only in the market of consumer products. This phenomenon occurs behind very obvious events every day in front of the eyes of millions of viewers. The miracle of Camp Nou in 1999 changed many things in the world of football. Until then, many of us had not heard the word comeback. We didn't know the value of the final seconds until Teddy Sheringham and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer scored against Bayern Munich. It was from that moment that the Bavarians realized that they had to change their minds about football. Since that year, Bayern Munich has won 16 of the 21 Bundesliga seasons. This famous football club received these titles like drinking a glass of water. In the 80s and 90s, Germans allowed football stars like Jürgen Klinsmann, Lothar Matthäus and Andreas Brehme to play in foreign football clubs. From 2000 onwards, Bayern Munich did not allow any team to think about recruiting German stars. By spending huge amounts of money in each football season, The CEOs of Bayern Munich chose only the best players of the other teams and did not think about picking and training new talents. It wasn't long before all the teams in Bundesliga were competing for the second place in the table. They knew that with good results, their players would go to Bayern Munich with tempting offers. The CEOs of Bayern Munich believe that you should score so many goals against a weak team that they forget about playing football again. UEFA's financial fair play rules were approved in 2010. One of the main goals of these rules was to prevent monopoly in football. According to this law, clubs do not have the right to spend more money than their income. And this prevents the injection of excessive financial resources or financial doping. However, many critics believe that UEFA's financial fair play not only does not break the monopoly of big football powers, but on the contrary, it is a tool in the hands of the old clubs to stand against the newly emerging and wealthy powers such as Paris Saint-Germain FC and Manchester City FC. These types of events in the world of football happen in Monopoly board game too. In this game, an experienced player plays with some inexperienced children and defeats everyone at the very beginning. Will these children play Monopoly again? Working on computer and surfing the net, you may not ask yourself why internet browsers are free. You probably think that free internet browsers show the benevolence and generosity of tech companies and even people like Bill Gates. But behind the scenes of these seemingly simple events, complex actions take place.
Netscape Navigator, software which makes it easy for people to connect to the global computer network called the Internet.
Netscape Navigator was the king of web browsers at the time. But there was a downside. You had to pay $49 to install Netscape on your computer.
In one of the most important antitrust law cases of 1996 in America, Microsoft, the information technology giant, was accused of providing Internet Explorer for free. Because apparently by doing a customer-oriented action, Microsoft had removed its smaller but more successful competitor, Netscape, from the competition scene.
The DOJ argued that Microsoft stifled competition by using its sheer size to barge into the browser wars. It could offer Internet Explorer for free, included in the OS, and Netscape would be cut out of the business from the very first time the computer was turned on. On top of that, if a person wanted to install Netscape on the computer, Microsoft allegedly made it incredibly difficult to do so. Microsoft, on the other hand, argued that people chose to use its operating system because it was simply better than the competition.
This monopolistic action of Microsoft showed how complicated and deceptive the behavior of huge companies can be in destroying competitors. Chance is one of the two types of card drawing spaces in Monopoly. If you enter the space, you pick one chance card and follow the order. Receiving money from the bank or paying a fine to the bank or anything else are written on the chance cards. In the game, the type of card chosen is completely random. But in the real world, random selection is not attractive because company managers do not like to be surprised. They prefer to advance their work in any way by helping their government financially or by doing humanitarian work. In the summer of 2020, The CEOs of the four American tech giants were summoned to the congressional hearing for the umpteenth time. Jeff Bezos, executive chairman of Amazon, Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, Mark Zuckerberg, chief executive officer of Facebook, and Tim Cook, chief executive officer of Apple. They were supposed to answer the questions of the U.S. congressman about eliminating small competitors and creating a monopoly. This meeting was held virtually due to COVID-19 pandemic and lasted about 5 hours. But this meeting was fruitless. The CEOs of these companies talked about their hard lives in childhood and youth, and then talked about their contribution to the economic prosperity of the United States of America.
The products we build have changed the world and improved people's lives. Our industry is one of the ways that America shares its values with the world and one of our greatest economic and cultural exploits. Facebook is part of this story. We started with an idea to give people the power to share and connect. And we've built services that billions of people find useful. I'm proud that we've given people who've never had a voice before the opportunity to be heard.
Tim Cook claimed that Apple's App Store alone contributed $138 billion to the U.S. market. Mark Zuckerberg talked about the help of Facebook in connecting the people of the world to each other, and when he was asked why he also bought Instagram in 2012, he said, "I never thought that this social networking system would become popular at that time." Finally, the CEOs of these four companies, whose capital is $5 trillion in total, finished the congressional hearing and nothing special happened, just like the previous meetings. Sundar Pichai still owns the world with Android. Jeff Bezos still destroys his competitors with online retail. Mark Zuckerberg still controls the world's communications with Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram. Tim Cook does not allow any competitor to get close to Apple products. These tech giants are so much big that no one can compete with them. These small companies are like the poor bankers in Monopoly board game that can't compete with powerful players. The banker is probably company's cooperator in this game.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Aruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round
with reporters.
Sunday, in major Australian cities in support of Palestinians in Gaza, the rallies took place under the name The Genocide Continues. Protesters denounced continued Israeli attacks and restrictions on aid entry into Gaza despite a ceasefire that took effect in early October. In Brisbane, about 1,000 people took to the streets, rejecting a plan proposed by US President Donald Trump to end the Gaza war.
I have family in Gaza, and they're in Jabalia, and they're completely under siege. This peace plan is not a plan for peace. This peace plan is a plan for further occupation and the further annexation of land that is not Israeli land.
Last week, some media revealed that Australia continued to transfer to Israel parts for the F-35 fighter jets and other materials, even on passenger aircraft, until October this year.
Last September, Australia recognized Palestine as a sovereign state, becoming one of more than 150 countries to do so. However, pro-Palestine advocates in Brisbane believe that much more is needed from the Australian government to satisfy its obligations under international law.
It's not enough, but there's also a lot more to happen there. There is recognizing that the genocide has been unfolding in the past 2 years, recognizing that there are approximately 100,000 Palestinians who have been killed. At least 83% of them are civilians and innocent people, women and children.
More protests in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians are expected to be organized in various Australian cities before Christmas festivities. Max Civili, Brisbane.
Tunisia's anti-normalization movement is entering a new phase. Civil society groups have announced the national initiative to gather 1 million signatures to push parliament to adopt an explicit law criminalizing normalization with the Israeli regime. The campaign builds on years of public opposition reinforced by the Trump-brokered Abraham Accords, which reignited fears of regional pressure on Tunisia to follow suit.
This initiative enjoys broad popular support. Our goal is to collect 1 million signatures to criminalize normalization in Tunisia. Since the Abraham Accords, we witnessed growing public concern and we started raising awareness across the region, where we found strong and consistent backing.
But organizers say the process will take time. Signature collection has not yet begun, as activists work to establish a secure legal mechanism for protecting personal data, a major concern among supporters of the initiative.
We began distributing flyers across different governorates, and we are now working on the legal framework for handling personal data in coordination with the Personal Data Protection Authority and the Interior Ministry to ensure full protection for citizens.
Inside the parliament, the legislative path remains uncertain. Although lawmakers submitted a draft law to criminalize normalization, the process stalled after the speaker relayed that the presidency had warned such legislation could harm Tunisia's external national security.
Parliament has already submitted and voted on the draft law, but it was suspended and remains pending. I believe the 1 million signatures initiative can support and intensify public pressure to move the law forward.
As activists finalize the legal groundwork, the campaign highlights a national debate balancing public pressure, data protection, and the political sensitivity of the proposed law. As Tunisia moves toward launching its 1 million signature campaign, the key question is how public mobilization, data safeguards, and political institutions will converge to advance a law that remains both sensitive and highly contested. Iskandar Nawar, Tunisia.
It may be just a song contest, but analysts say this could be the moment that triggers long-awaited international pressure on the Israeli regime over its crimes against humanity. Because Israel will take part, Ireland will not participate in the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest next May. And state broadcaster RTE is also refusing to air the event.
This is great for to see Ireland boycotting. And I wish to see my own home country, Norway, do this exactly same thing. Where we have been discussing the same topic as you guys in terms of boycotting this year's Eurovision if Israel's going to participate.
Ireland will not be a participant in next year's Eurovision Song Contest.
The same step has been taken by public broadcasters in Spain, the Netherlands and Slovenia, generating widespread international coverage. Campaigners say this alone is a major victory, but they insist pressure must now intensify on EU leaders to seize the moment and impose tough sanctions on Tel Aviv.
I am ashamed to be European at the moment because the European Union is doing nothing at all. It's not doing nothing to stop the genocide, it's contributing to the genocide.
The European Broadcasting Union, which oversees Eurovision, moved swiftly to ban Russia, yet has taken no such action against Israel. Activists argue that if a major country like Germany were to withdraw, the message would be impossible to ignore. But they say Berlin is unlikely to act due to lingering guilt over World War II.
We are seeing a genocide, you know, in front of our eyes. So you can get away from this guilt feeling and try to solve this problem.
For its part, Irish broadcaster RTE says it would be unconscionable for Ireland to be involved in the Eurovision Song Contest, given the appalling loss of life in Gaza and the humanitarian crisis there. While the decision by RTE has been broadly welcomed here in Ireland, pressure continues on the Irish government to cut all trade ties with Israel and also use its influence in Brussels to encourage other EU countries to do the same. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The Trump administration has released its national security strategy for 2025, a document that marks stark differences from earlier strategies issued by the same administration. Let's go over some of the key details.
Western hemispheric dominance, aiming to block what it calls foreign influence in the Americas and shift U.S. military assets toward the Western hemisphere, away from theaters whose relative importance to American national security has declined in recent decades.
The strategy outlines a major shift in U.S. military posture. Observers say the move may be linked to recent U.S. strikes on boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific, and efforts to remove Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro by force.
Deterring conflict over Taiwan, unlike earlier strategies that framed China as the top geopolitical rival, the 2025 NSS declares that economic relations are the decisive arena. It underscores the need for allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing power in the Indo-Pacific.
The document signals a change in tone. Rather than framing China solely as a geopolitical rival, it emphasizes economic competition as the decisive arena. At the same time, it calls on allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing influence in the Indo-Pacific.
Berating Europe, criticizing Europe's migration policies, regulatory focus, and handling of Ukraine conflict, suggesting that the continent must take primary responsibility for its own defense. Switching focus from the West Asia, declaring the region no longer a top priority due to U.S. energy independence and perceived decline in conflict, though still committed to Israel's security. It goes on to argue that the conflict and violence in the region are also subsiding, citing the ceasefire in Gaza and the U.S. attack on Iran in June, which it said significantly degraded Tehran's nuclear program.
It declares the United States energy independent, a claim critics say underscores whether Washington's past involvement in the region was driven by oil. Yet critics point out that Israeli violations of the Gaza ceasefire continue, and Iran remains determined to pursue its peaceful nuclear program. Upon a question about Gaza ceasefire's phase two, Trump told reporters on Thursday that it was going along well. He acknowledged Palestinian deaths as a problem, yet he insisted that West Asia is at peace.
We have peace in the Middle East. People don't realize it. We have tremendous support. 59 countries. There's tremendous support.
Tehran has dismissed the strategy as essentially a security document for Israel. Iran argues that ensuring U.S. access to regional energy resources and guaranteeing Israel's security are the two fundamental issues driving Washington's policy in West Asia. Critics say the new national security strategy only underscores the hypocrisy of the Trump administration, revealing that America's true aim has always been dominating global energy and expanding Israel's power at any cost.
Hatred against Muslims in the UK and the wider West has been on the rise for the past two decades, but has skyrocketed since October the 7th, 2023, as the Zionist oligarchy has sought to win back public support following the collapse of sympathy for the Israeli regime.
To discuss the growing Islamophobic hatred and discrimination, especially in the UK, a conference of academics has been organised in the British capital, London, to discuss the causes of this shift and to try to work towards solutions to make Muslims safer in the current climate.
Conference organisers, the Islamic Human Rights Commission, say that hatred against Muslims has gone into overdrive since October the 7th, as Zionist billionaires and tech chiefs have pivoted to demonising Muslims in response to collapsing support for the Israeli regime.
We need to recognise that there's been a rise amongst the far right across different European countries, and we've seen the attempts that have been made, for example, in the UK, to actually deflect people from Gaza, from what's going on in West Asia. And what we've actually seen is that people, there's a lot of funding of the far right that is coming from some of the Zionist organizations in America. That money trail has actually been identified.
While the anti-Muslim hatred spewed on social media and right-wing TV channels has led to an explosion of violent hate crimes against Muslims on the streets, there's also been a significant Islamophobic shift on an institutional level.
But Islamophobia is a much more serious problem than just the question of attacks on the streets. There is discrimination and bias all the way through the whole system. Muslims are the poorest ethnic and religious demographic in the country. Muslims are most discriminated against through counter-terrorism legislation. Muslims are the targets of the prevent policy. So there's all sorts of ways in which Muslims are discriminated against, which come directly from the state. State racism is the most important form of racism.
The fear is that in Western countries like the UK, anti-Muslim hatred doesn't exist in a vacuum and is building public consent for pogroms against Muslims, culminating in a huge push to ethnically cleanse them from Europe altogether at the behest of Zionist Jewish capital. To defeat such a genocidal agenda, these academics argue, will require huge political unity and organisation across different political trends. East Academy, London.
Across the United States, protests were held against a major air and missile attack on Venezuela, which appears closer and closer. Washington has already carried out dozens of airstrikes, killing nearly 100 people, and assembled the largest U.S. armada in Latin American waters since the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. United States President Donald Trump blamed Venezuela, without evidence, for being the primary source of America's drug problems. But many believe it's their socialist-inspired government, which capitalist imperialist Washington cannot allow.
The latest polls we've seen are that 70% of the people in the United States do not support a military invasion of Venezuela, and that tracks what we've been seeing since August. And in fact, support is falling for a war against Venezuela, despite the Trump administration's insistence that an attack is imminent.
Many say that Venezuela is too strong for a ground invasion, even after decades of brutal Western sanctions that have sought to strangle the population and foment civil war.
And if they were to enter into Venezuela, it would be an endless war. Because right now, first of all, Venezuela has 8 million people in their citizen militias. And while Washington may say, oh, it's not really 8 million people, but whatever number it is, it's certainly hundreds of thousands of people who are really ready and willing to take arms to defend their lands. Because first of all, they've seen what the United States does to their enemies, going back to Korea, Vietnam, Laos, but also more recently to Palestine. And they know that what the Gazans suffered, what the people of Palestine suffered, is on the agenda for the people of Venezuela.
Trump's aggression towards Venezuelans is a direct contradiction of his anti-war campaign promises and a continuation of decades of neoliberalism.
This is absolutely the opposite of what he campaigned on and absolutely the opposite of what the MAGA base wants. And I think that is one restraining factor. I think that there is tremendous division within this White House about what to do on Venezuela. And I think one of the more moderating factors is the Pentagon itself. It says that this would be disastrous.
As the United States has failed across the Middle East, they appear to be pulling back their imperialist aggression to what they consider their own backyard, Latin America. Apart from being socialist-inspired, Venezuela sits on the world's largest oil reserves. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
You're not aware that we're aware of your despair. Don't show your tears to your oppressor. Don't show your tears. Try not to cry.
Davis, Lou, Goliath, this very same place that we be at. Passing through the center times, this land been a victim of countless crimes. From crusaders, mongers, to the present aggression. Then the Franks, now even a cruel oppression. If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say. For me in this path that I walk on, there's only one way. Bullets may kill, bones may break. Still I throw stones like David before me, and I say,
try not to cry.
No pierdas la fe, la sed, la calma el que hace. Agua de la arena, y tú que te levantas con orgullo entre las piedras. Has hecho mares de este polvo.
Yeah, I throw stones at my eyes. For too long they've been dry. Plus they see what they shouldn't from oppressed babies to thighs. I throw stones at my tongue, cause shit should really keep its peace. I throw stones at my feet, cause they stray and lead to defeat. Couple of big ones at my heart, cause the thing is freezing cold. But my nub's still alive and kicking, unstoppable on the road. I throw bricks at the devil, so I'll be sure to hit him. But first at the man in the mirror, so I can chase out the venom.
Little boy, shining ahead. Just another kiss and out to get some bread. Not the first murder, nor the last. Again and again, a repetition of the past.
Since the very first day, same story.
Young ones, old ones, some glory. How can it be? Has the whole world turned blind? Or is it just cause it's only affecting my kind? If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say? For me, this path that I walk on, there's only one way.
Bullets may kill, bones may break. Instead of those stones, David, I say,
bullets may kill, bones may break. Instead of those stones, David, I say,
try not to cry.
Yeah,
I'll throw with you.
I'll stand by you.
Stand by you.
I'll
shine. A shining jewel right in the heart of the country. It's an enchanting and beautiful city with an ancient civilization. It's a destination filled with wonders.
Kashan runs along the edge of the Great Desert, a four-hour drive that's 250 kilometers southeast of Tehran. The city is a delightful and amazing destination that has managed to preserve its traditional architecture and urban design. Excavations have revealed that Kashan was one of the primary centers of civilization in the prehistoric ages. The first destination that lures you in once you reach Kashan is the impressive Fin Garden.
The Fin Garden is a cultural and historical site located right in the heart of Kashan. The sound of the water among the birds and the trees, as well as all the important events that have taken place in this garden, make this site a popular and beautiful must-see destination.
Covering an area of more than 2 hectares, this garden was built back in the Safavid era in the 16th century. The garden contains numerous cypress trees and combines architectural features of the Safavid, Zandia, and Qajar periods. Kashan is mostly known for its gorgeous and one-of-a-kind architecture. The city showcases some of the best traditional architectural sites in the country. The traditional houses scattered around the city of Kashan are an epitome of grandeur, elegance, and splendor, a direct result of thousands of years of adaptation to the dry desert summers. Efficient yet technical houses that reflect the craftsmanship of the architects of the time.
Kashan is a very beautiful city. I like the architecture and people so.
Architects used bricks for the construction of the main structure, while mud and straw were used for insulation and the facade. Artistic designs like mirror work were used for making the inner spaces, especially the ceilings, look more beautiful. Wind catchers, cellars, and basements were also constructed to make sure there are areas inside the building with cool and pleasant temperature during very hot summer days. During the recent years, these historic houses have been revived, restored, and converted into hotels, residential, and cultural complexes for those who visit Kashan every year. The Omeri House was one of those historic sites that caught our attention. The house was hosting the French Cultural Week, meaning to bring both countries closer in the field of arts and culture. We took a look around, marveling at the splendid architecture and at the same time enjoying the presence of the French and Iranian artists.
Spoon to eat soup. You have a nice soup, vegetable soup, meat, fruit, and you have a beautiful plate to eat in Iran, like carapacha.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my first time in Cachan. I already went in Fine Garden. This is a lovely place. It looks like paradise. I love flowers, tree, fountain water. Here in Cachan, people are so nice, so lovely. And the food is also very delicious.
The Ame House was built during the Zand era in the 18th century for the governor of Kashan.
Ameria is a real nice place, and you feel really calm, relaxed. The most important for me is people. They are so kindly. They are so respectable.
Just imagine living in a beautiful grand house like this one. 85 rooms, several courtyards in 9,000 square meters of space. It really does sound like a fairy tale, doesn't it? The house is beautifully decorated with the smallest of details. The gorgeous mirror works, the delicately carved plaster works on the walls and ceilings, the colorful windows that draw the warm winter light in. Everything about this place is timeless and captivating. Some things can't be expressed in words. Things like love, honor, culture, art, peace, and everything that binds us together as humans, despite our race and the language we speak. Kashan is where the heart speaks. Hoda Lezgi for Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Thank you. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 146 to 148 of chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parisgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa ka'ayyim min nabiyyin qatala ma'ahu ribbiyyuna kathir.